Welcome to the Cambi Report interview series, Adrian Crook. And I guess we should disclose that you are one of the patrons to Cambi Report. We do maintain an editorial policy of listening to everyone, including our patrons, but we don't try to give you any special say. For those who don't know you, who are you and why did you decide to get involved in politics?
Yeah, so some people know me from that Five Kids, One Condo blog. I'm a single dad of five living in downtown Vancouver. I spent the little portion of my childhood growing up in East Van, and then I moved out to Port Moody before moving back downtown when I was when I moved out of the house, I guess, like in my early 20s or so. I'm also a co-founder of Abundant Housing and Abundant Transit BC, two nonprofits that advocate for exactly what they sound like they advocate for, more homes and more transit for people in our region and our city.
And so why move from blogging and working on nonprofits to running for council?
Yeah. So my day job is I run a game design consultancy. So we design games for like Lego and Pokemon and big companies like that, Zynga. And I've done game design, which is a lot about sort of behavioral psychology and all sorts of, you know, cool topics that have, you know, some crossover, I guess, to the real life. But basically a few years ago when I started writing Five Kids, One Condo, I did that because I was really interested in civic engagement sort of issues and urbanism. And it's not your typical sort of like mom or dad blog where I talk about, well, I'm changing a diaper again or something like that. Like it really is probably like too weighty for its own good. I think it, you know, it probably turns off a lot of a lot of would-be fans by, you know, the urbanist type topics I try to tackle in that. So then when I really got on that sort of jag and writing for Five Kids, One Condo and building up an audience there and building up a network based on that audience, they were really cool people. Like you sort of find your tribe, right, on Twitter and on Facebook and in the real world, consequently. And that sort of pulled me more into the circles I really wanted to be in. You know, when you do something for like two decades of your life, like video game design, you know, it starts out really fun and you're rewarded well for it. But then later on, you know, as a grown adult now with five kids and a whole different set of concerns than when I, you know, the ones I had when I was 19, I wanted to do things that sort of gave back and had a more real world impact on my community than, say, video game design. So that's when, you know, Abundant Housing Vancouver and Abundant Transit, co-founded those. So,
well, assuming you are elected on October 21st and you find yourself coming into what's likely to be a very diverse council, how do you work with this disparate group to advance the goals you want to see?
Yeah, and I mean, that's another big reason why I chose to run independent. So what's kind of put me off a tiny bit on politics, even just in the time, not even since I've been campaigning, but sort of before that, is you see this kind of knee-jerk tribalism between members of different political parties, where if one advances an idea, the other side has to find something wrong with it, some reason to shoot it down, even if it's, you know, objectively a good idea and something that we should get behind for the benefit of the city. And you even saw that happening in our last 10 years, I guess, now of the current council, where you have like a vision majority and the vision majority can kind of do what they want. And that's fine. I mean, I agree with a lot of those ideas too. But then the other side, the MPA in this case, sort of falls into the role of opposition, which is not really something that should exist at a municipal level, the idea of an opposition party. And I think, you know, we have a chance at a healthier council. If you have a few independents and a couple members of different parties in there, then you actually have to work together and talk about the merits of each idea rather than this sort of like performance theater kind of, you know, I'm going to object even though I know you're going to ram it through anyways kind of nonsense that I think we've sort of seen for 10 years now and grown tired of.
So let's get into the actual policies. What are the issues you're talking about? And let's maybe start with housing. How do we fix it?
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a hashtag about that, isn't there? Yeah, I mean, fixing is such a strong word. I think we can make it better, and we can make it better even in the medium term than it is now. And a lot of that has to do with unwinding the system that got us into this mess in the first place. And I know Hector has adopted a lot of this messaging, but this is abundant housing messaging about land use reform and the three quarters of our city that's devoted to only to detached houses. And I think we can do a lot better than that. We can, you know, for projects that give us community benefit, we can offer certain incentives, things like projects like purpose-built rental, co-ops, co-housing, land trusts, seniors housing, temporary modular housing. All of this kind of stuff is what we need more of. We've certainly gone hard on either detached housing or towers in the city for decades. And those have sort of been the only, like, it's been a binary choice. You either, you get one or the other and suck it up if you don't like it. There's no money for anything else. And I think what we need is a balance. We need to now counterbalance that, quite frankly, with these other sort of non-market housing types. But to do that, we'll need to do a bit of public and private kind of help in that regard. So it can't all be public. We can't expect all the money to come from various levels of government and us to only use city land, although I do think that's part of it. There has to be a bit of things like density bonusing for great purpose-built rental projects that offer deep affordability. There has to be more of that carrot approach than the stick approach, because at the same time, while I do support controls on rent to some degree for renters, certainly in this market, it's a tough market. I'm a renter. My rent goes up every year by like $100, the absolute maximum every single time. So I can understand why renters, want that rent control. But on the other hand, we need meaningful choice for renters too. So we need to incentivize the creation of purpose-built rentals so that if you are going to get kicked out of your place, like rent evicted, like every day I check Craigslist just in case. And I've been in my place fortunately for 5 years, but every day I have 3 saved Craigslist searches that I check just to stay on top of it. So that if, a family of 6 like us is kicked out, we have a way to, maybe a jump on where to land. So more options for where to live would be a fantastic boon to the renters in the city.
And so housing's not your only policy you've talked about. What are some of the other things you're focused on and really passionate about?
Yeah, well, transportation. Obviously, the other reason people might know me is the whole bus dad episode where the ministry told me my kids couldn't take the bus. We've been taking the bus now. We're car free. So we've been taking the bus now for 4 years, I guess. This will be our 4th year to and from school and, for all sorts of other things. So obviously getting people who have the choice, getting them into other modes of transportation is a huge priority. The city only has so much leeway in that regard. Obviously, TransLink is TransLink. It's not under the city's exclusive purview. But the city can do things like bus rapid transit lanes. And that's what I was at an all candidates meeting at TransLink actually a couple weeks ago. And Kevin Desmond, their CEO, made that very, very clear, is that even though TransLink can come with money to the cities and say they want these bus rapid transit lanes, it's totally down to the cities whether or not they can get those. So on our commute every day, thankfully the kids have now gone back to taking the bus on their own because there's one of them is over 12. But there is the, let's see if I get this right, Powell, Nanaimo, McGill. There's that sort of snake on to get onto the Second Narrows Bridge because they go to school in North Van. That has got, I would count maybe 10 cars across that whole stretch parked in the parking lane. And if we could convert that parking lane in peak hours to a bus rapid transit lane, at times it could shave 20 minutes off your ride if you run into congestion. So there are some like easy wins I think we can do for transit to make it a better option for drivers that right now look at it and go, why would I double or triple my transportation time by taking transit?
Let's close out with just 2 quicker personal questions. First, we've been asking people who should be Vancouver's unofficial ambassador, a la Justin McElroy's bracket competition. Who's your pick?
Yeah, I'm going to go a bit off script here and I'm going to make a pick that's probably like, to some it's controversial, to some it's like super popular, but it's on the tip of everyone's tongue, and I'm going to say bike lanes.
Oh.
Bike lanes would be my Vancouver ambassador at this particular point in time because it's become emblematic of Vancouver, both in good and bad ways, to different groups of people. And it's the thing that I would put, it's maybe in the top 2 things that I get asked about. Whenever somebody comes to my Facebook page and they go, what's your position on bike lanes? it's a loaded question.
Well, and for a last question, what's one thing that Vancouver's lost in its many years of change that you would bring back?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I spent the first few years of my life in East Van, and then I spent the next good chunk of my adolescence, I guess, in Port Moody, and I used to be able to walk on my own to the corner store. And so there's 2 things in there that I think we're missing, and one of them is the idea of corner stores, small businesses owned by like the mom and pop type business where you can sleep above it. It was, literally like a large house that had like lower level as a corner store. And you still see some evidence of these kind of things when we do our abundant housing walking tours, like the Mighty Oak and the Wilder Snail. Actually, Mighty Oak doesn't have a second level. Wilder Snail and LaMarche St. George would be good examples. And so they're like just these awesome opportunities for mom and pop businesses to make a go in the middle of a residential neighborhood, which we decided to outlaw for some reason around 1947. I want to see that stuff come back. And then the independence as a child to explore the city. And that's obviously something that, you know, does due to the bus stuff and all that stuff is, it's always been near and dear to me. Like, you know, our cities are actually quite safe. Vancouver is a really, really safe city. The statistics bear that out. It's safer than it was decades ago, even when I grew up. And if we want our kids to love cities the same way we do, we need to give them that ability and that free rein to explore them.
All right. If people want to learn more about you and your campaign, where can they find you?
I just love social media, so probably too much on Twitter, at Adrian Crook, also at 5Kids1Condo for more sort of generic stuff, voteadriancrook.com, Facebook, Instagram, at Adrian Crook, all over the place.
Thank you so much, Adrian.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Take care.